Hello again and welcome to Reality Check. I'm Jeannie Allen. Our guest on this edition is Jacob Hubert. He's the director of litigation at the Liberty Justice Center, where he litigates cases to protect economic liberty, the First Amendment, and other constitutional rights in federal and state courts in Illinois. As such, Jacob is an attorney in the Janus v. AFSCME case, in which the Supreme Court any day now will decide whether governments can force their employees to pay fees to a union as a condition of their employment. As most of you know, we've been following the Janus case since the beginning, so I'm so excited to have Jacob on our show today. Jacob, welcome to Reality Check.
Thanks for having me. Well, we're here in Illinois where there are hundreds of thousands of government workers at every level who are forced to give money to a union out of every paycheck to be allowed to do their jobs. And over the years, we've heard from a lot of people who object to this because they don't support what their union advocates for, or at least not everything their union advocates for, and they don't think they should have to pay it. And one of those people, a man named Mark Janus, who's a child support specialist for the state of Illinois, not only was upset about this, but was willing to stand up and actually challenge this in court. And we did so on his behalf, together with our partners at the National Right to Work Foundation. And the case has gone now all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
That must have been incredibly exciting for you. You know, we've talked a lot on this Reality Check podcast, Jacob, about the Janus case. And on a regular basis, of course, this is important to so many people for so many reasons, and in particular because our education system is just not doing what it needs to be doing for kids. And so while Mark Janus is a government worker in Illinois that deals with non-education issues directly, this will, as you pointed out, just affect millions of people who are tired of paying thousands of dollars to a union they don't agree with. How did you find the experience? And tell us a little bit about, before we kind of jump to what we can expect or kind of quarterbacking the decision. Tell us about how you felt when you walked the U.S. Supreme Court, and was it anything surprising?
Well, I mean, you're not fully prepared for that experience. I had never done it before, so it's pretty amazing. And what was most amazing about it on that day was to see all the people who had gathered out in front of the U.S. Supreme Court to support Mark Janus. There were so many teachers and people who care about this issue, other government workers, all there holding signs saying that they stand with Mark Janus and people like him who don't think they should have to give money to a government union just to be allowed to be a teacher or a child support worker or a firefighter or whatever it might be.
And then there were the people on the other side, and we were out there, and we've actually taped some of their commentary. Some of it was not exactly what you would call polite. Much of their antagonism, and it was antagonism, wasn't very civil. And I was just really struck by that this may be an issue upon which, as we like to say, reasonable people can disagree, but it was anything but agreeable out there.
My name is Terry Bowman.
Hi, Terry. Where are you from?
Michigan.
Michigan. And what brought you here?
I'm standing with Mark Janus, and I believe very strongly in this Supreme Court case, and I'm praying that come June it will come in benefit of Mark Janus in this case.
And why is that so important to you?
Because I think in Mark Janus, the specific argument that he is making, that he is having to support a political agenda that he disagrees with. I am worked for Ford Motor Company. I've worked right on the assembly line for over 21 years. I've been forced to support a union that I disagree with, that I have moral objections with because of their political and social agenda. I fight for union members to be able to choose for themselves whether or not they want to give their money to a union that may support causes that they disagree with. In Mark's case, all government sector union workers are inherently political because of exactly what a government sector union does. They receive taxpayer money for everything, so everything they do is political in nature.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. On the other side, partisans didn't want to talk about the rights of government employees, but were happy to talk about those who they consider the enemy, like Education Secretary Betsy DeVos.
What does Betsy DeVos have to do with this case?
I mean, the DeVos family is one of the big right-wing funders.
Okay, but what does it have to do with worker freedom?
Well, I mean, she funds anti-union, anti-teachers union things all over the country.
Okay. And tell me more about your views. So why should we, if someone's listening, why should they come on your side?
Well, because joining together in a union is a fundamental right. Like, fighting for your rights at work is what makes a difference for you, gives you a voice.
Okay. And what about Mark Janis, that he says he wants the choice?
He's not required to join the union. He never has been.
And what about paying? Does that matter?
Well, reimbursing the union for the work that they have to do for him is fair.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
One teacher from Philadelphia chose to tell the crowd about the conditions at the public magnet school where she teaches, but nothing about mandatory union dues.
We had classrooms with no teachers, water fountains which you could not drink from, counselors and nurses cut from our school budgets, that it posed serious danger. Danger turned to death for two of our students who had asthma attacks in schools that didn't have a nurse. We became teachers because we care about young people. We couldn't stand by for all this mess of a crisis that was happening in Philadelphia. The divide of the haves and have-nots is widening.
Jeannie got a very different view from Gary Beckner, whose organization represents tens of thousands of American teachers who regard themselves as professionals, not union members.
I'm talking to Gary Beckner, the founding president of the Association for American Educators. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
I'm so glad to see you here at the Supreme Court today, waiting for the Janus oral arguments to be done. Tell me something. You've been out in the crowd, walking around. What did you hear from the opponents?
Well, I asked a half a dozen, maybe more than half a dozen people, what some of their signs meant, because I thought they would be more kind of in tune to support Mark, like unrig the system. Ask a half a dozen people, and nobody would either answer, but they mainly just looked blank, like they didn't understand either. And one sweet little girl finally just said, "Sir, I was just paid to hold this sign up, okay?"
Well, at least they were honest with you. I asked a bunch where they were from, and they wouldn't even tell me what organization they were from.
No, well, maybe they are not from an organization. They were just dropped off here by a bus, you know, so who knows where they're from.
Gary, why did you start AAE? What, how many years ago now?
23 years ago. 23 years ago. Because we had a number of teachers in our church that were upset with having to pay the California Teacher Association dues. And one of them just said, isn't there somebody out there that can provide liability insurance and doesn't take your money for politics? And we thought about it. My wife and I are in between jobs. Had a little bit of money at the time. It's like, well, why not us? And we started it and thinking somebody would finally come along and take it away from us, but nobody has. And so it's been a fun journey all along. Every time the union says, you know, try to put us out of business, they're picking on the wrong people.
They absolutely are, because you're on the side of teachers. Thank you so much, Gary Beckner.
You're welcome.
Well, I wasn't out there for most of that, so I can't comment. But I do know that what I definitely felt from Mark's supporters was just pure positivity for the message of worker freedom. It wasn't about being antagonistic toward any other group or any people. It was just about giving these workers the right to decide for themselves what they'll do with their money.
And so what do you think? So just explain again for our listeners, ever so layman in layman's language, as they say, what a pro-Janus decision would likely allow workers to do or not do that's different from the status quo?
Well, if the Supreme Court rules in Mark Janus's favor, that means that he and every government worker at every level will have the right to choose whether to give any money to a union. If Mark Janus wins, then nobody in government should be forced to give money to any union for anything anymore.
So there'll be no such thing really as a right to work state because all states will be right to work in effect.
For government workers, this won't affect the private sector because the situation is a bit different there. But in government, no one will be forced to fund a union.
And this is a question that a lot of people have raised over time that I think is interesting, particularly educators, Jacob, people are unclear that a teacher joins the union and then they are compelled to pay, or if they choose not to join the union, they're still compelled to pay. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Supreme Court had a decision about 40 years ago where it said you can't make government workers pay union dues. You can't make them join the union and pay dues, but you can still make them pay for their proportionate share of the union's cost of representing them. And the idea here was the court said workers have a right not to pay for certain union political activities, like participation in elections. Workers can't be forced to pay for that, but they can be forced to pay for their share of the representation. And so since then, you've had a system where workers in these non-right-to-work states have a choice. They can either pay full union dues, or they can pay an amount that's slightly less, typically, that's called an agency fee that supposedly just reflects the union's cost of representing them.
But that's the key word, supposedly, because the people who are determining that agency fee share instead of the full union are the very people who are benefiting from those funds. And so they back out political activity, and they may call political activity something else in order to charge it to the teacher, right?
That's right. There's a couple of problems with this system. One problem is that everything a public sector union does is political. Even when they're just representing workers, when they're bargaining on their behalf, they're telling the government things like how much it should spend on employee salaries and what kind of benefits it should provide. And sometimes they're even arguing things like the government should raise taxes to pay for all the spending that the union wants. And, of course, all of that is political in nature. If anybody else talks to the government about those kinds of things, everyone recognizes that as political, and we call it lobbying.
That's right.
Even if you put that problem to the side, there's still the problem, as you say, that the union decides for itself what counts as political and what doesn't. And so they'll tend to charge workers for things that are in a gray area, arguably, or they'll push the envelope, and so they'll make workers pay for things like lobbying the legislature and advertising to the public and other things that are very tangential to the actual representation.
Well,
and they can get away with that because it's incredibly difficult for a worker to find out what their money is going to and then to challenge it.
Well, and it makes me wonder, whether Randy Weingarten last summer, when she said that charter schools, because they threaten union membership, charter schools are polite cousins of segregation, which was so incredibly offensive, wrong, and ugly. Would she think that was political? Probably not. But the net effect was to scare a lot of people into thinking that they'd be attacked for supporting something that has actually helped a majority of minority kids across this country.
Well, of course, and it just goes to show that everything these organizations do is political. They exist to direct the flow of government money to certain people and not to certain other people. That's what they're all about. And as they brag sometimes to some audiences toward advancing all sorts of policy agendas that have nothing to do with the workplace or representing workers.
Well, that's right. So, for example, we've been looking at some of the NEA's resolutions from the past several years. They get together for their annual representative assembly over July 4th, ironic, on a day of freedom, and they go through some 500 pages of resolutions, the majority of which have nothing to do with education. So they have nuclear-free zones, they have health-related issues, they have issues about, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and everything in between.
Yep, and people who are not union members are paying for those conventions where they pass those resolutions and do all kinds of advocacy.
So Mark Janus, and then before him, of course, the other case that made it to the court but was deadlocked in a tie, Rebecca Friedrichs, who was a public school teacher, seemed to already be having a positive effect on union membership and on the freedom, I'd say, of people to kind of push back on membership, because the unions are already beginning to cut. So even though they've got an ironclad hold on some people in some states, they're already beginning to cut back on expenses, thinking that this is going to come down against them. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, they say they're going to do that. And, of course, they try to make it sound like the sky is going to fall if they don't win in this lawsuit and they just won't be able to do anything. But, of course, that's not true. They will have lots of people who still want to be members, and they can still represent workers using that money that people pay them voluntarily. But hopefully what they'll do is now start listening to everybody they represent and thinking about how they can actually provide something of value to them, because they'll have to actually earn the support.
You know, a lot of people out there can remember a time, you know, either from the history books or their own families, where many public sector unions were helpful and supportive. What's the difference? What's changed, in your opinion, Jacob? And maybe you don't agree with that. I'd love to just your thoughts in general. But didn't there used to be a much more, I don't know, professional community spirit in the service of the union?
I don't have a good sense of that, but I would imagine that as the unions take this money for granted over time, they would tend naturally to just drift more and more away from their core mission and from listening to the people who they're supposed to represent, because they get the money no matter what. So why wouldn't the union leaders just do whatever they feel like doing and advancing whatever causes are important to them personally, rather than what's important to the workers or what's important to, say, the students in the schools and so on?
You know, that's such a great point. You know, the farther away from the individual decision-making goes, the farther away from that the individual gets from being able to have and control their own destiny. This happens just about everywhere, both in government, large organizations, vested interest, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And this case is really just all about restoring individuals' right to decide for themselves what's important to them, what they want to give their money to, and what ideas they'll advance.
So I had a guest who argued that the teachers might act a little bit differently if they are thoughtful enough in the face of a pro-Janus decision. Maybe they'll begin to make their association more democratic in exchange for people voluntarily wanting to join. That might be a positive outcome if the union offers anything to those teachers. But what happens if the ruling's not in favor of Mark Janus? What message do you think that might send for future litigation and public workers? Is there a potential for that to happen?
Well, certainly that would be discouraging, and it would just keep the status quo in place where millions of government workers across the country are forced to support a union. And, of course, we would continue to look for ways to protect workers' rights as much as we can, but a loss in this case would be a huge setback.
And what is Mark Janus doing these days waiting for a decision? How's he spending his time?
He's going to work every day, as he has throughout this whole litigation. And, he just tries to focus on that, and he's gone out to some extent and spoken about the case and so on, but mostly he's just focused on doing his work and handling all this really well. It's really extraordinary that he has so much courage that he's willing to put his name alone on this case and stand up for all the workers like him who have been forced to do this, who don't want to do it, but who might be fearful, because a lot of people understandably are fearful because they think, you know, they could get retaliated against, their life could be made unpleasant. But we're very lucky that Mark has been willing to just take this on and not worry about it.
It's amazingly courageous. I mean, he's dedicated himself to a life of public service. He's not been politically active or engaged. He started asking questions, and he didn't like the what was being done with his money. And as you said, he kind of stood up and has been fearlessly helping be the voice of many public workers out there. Have there been any negative impacts on him as a result of this?
Not really. He says there are some people in his workplace, maybe union stewards and so on, who just don't talk to him, ignore him. But he says also there have been many people who have taken him aside privately and said, hey, I really support what you're doing. I can't really say so publicly, but I'm definitely with you, and I hope you win, that sort of thing. He has people at work doing that. He gets letters in the mail like that, and really relatively little otherwise. Of course, there's people saying nasty things in the press and so on, but fortunately he's able to pretty much just disregard all that.
Well, that's terrific. Jacob, it is such a pleasure to have you on this edition of Reality Check, and we wish you the best over the next several days as we all wait patiently for the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully we'll have some good news soon.
Me too. My guest on today's Reality Check has been Jacob Hubert, Director of Litigation at the Liberty Justice Center and the lead attorney in the Janus versus AFSCME case. You can learn more about the Liberty Justice Center at libertyjusticecenter.org. Follow them on Twitter at LJCenter. And as always, you can find out more about the Center for Education Reform, Reality Check, and me at Jeannie Allen and at Ed Reform. Thanks so much for listening. Reality Check is a twice-monthly podcast produced by National Review and posted at nationalreview.com in association with CER, the Center for Education Reform. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free to make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can also subscribe at all these really cool technological places that they have now, like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more information about education, the workforce, and compelling issues surrounding our country and our kids and learners at all levels at the Center for Education Reform website, edreform.com. Come visit us. I'm Jeannie Allen.